And we're in. Welcome to Real Estate Makes Us Drink. I'm Brian Quinlan from Daniels Real Estate.
Brad Nickum from Nest Mortgage Group.
Today is going to be a success happy hour. We have a new friend to the show. Sir, tell him who you are.
My name is Jake Query. I know nothing about real estate success, and every once in a while I drink beer. So I'm one for three, so that's good.
How about mortgages?
When I was in high school, my buddies and I got a job doing telemarketing for a mortgage company that's no longer around, and we got fired for calling random numbers and seeing how far away we could actually make connections. But I'm still friends with the people we made friends with who had my phone number in England. So that's cool.
Well, that's fantastic.
But now my, if you want to call it how I make my living, I host a radio show on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan called Query & Company. I host a podcast with a guy named Derek Schultz that I used to do a radio show with. And I do turn announcing and play-by-play for the IndyCar Radio Network.
That's fantastic. I have to say, you are, actually, I would call you our first celebrity.
So that's a fact. I don't know about that, but I appreciate you saying that. But
there are people who know who you are. We'll count that as celebrity.
Right? I was at a party this weekend where multiple people knew who he was. So yeah,
there you go.
Celebrity.
All right. Well, what are you drinking, dude?
Well, my buddy Arturo from Lost Lore Tequila sent me some tequila. So I took a little Lost Lore high proof and made the Winter Paloma that I put on my
Tequila with Brad show.
So Lost Lore Tequila, fantastic tequila coming to the Indianapolis area. You can find it all over the United States, but the Midwest is a little bit out of reach for them, but they're coming soon.
Coming soon to your
porch. Hopefully by May, it'll be here. Coming soon to my porch, in fact.
He keeps getting tequila sent to him. So
smart. Well, I could tell. Looking around here, there's all kinds of decor.
Yeah.
Good.
That there is. All right. So today I have, what do we got here? NWI Light says premium Pilsner with corn and oats. Too tiny for me to read, but it does have the state symbol for Indiana.
No, wait, this is made by who?
That's what I can't tell.
And it has corn.
Can you read that? It does. Yeah.
Did it taste?
Windmill Brewery. Windmill Brewing.
There we go.
How's it taste? Did you taste it?
You know, it tastes like the other light-colored beers that I drink.
Like corn and oats.
It's like corn and oats. One thing you'll learn about me, Jake, is my taste is not very refined, so me trying to pick out flavors, not real good.
We said he doesn't have any taste buds. They're all just pal.
So now, here's what I have that you brought for me.
Yeah.
This is made by the Guardian Brewing Company out of Muncie, Indiana. This is called Charlie Cream Ale. And my nephew Charlie goes to Ball State, which is in Muncie, so I figured I got to try it. And you guys gave me a Kentucky Derby glass, which these are so awesome and cool. The mint juleps come in these, but my grandparents collected them for years. So I had a whole bunch of them, and you put it in this. I said, this is perfect. So yeah. There we go.
I have a cabinet full of them. We go to the Derby every year.
Thanks for being here.
And cheers.
If you knew what Jake and I had to go through to get here, you'd be even more impressed that this show is happening, because we have about a centimeter of snow with ice outside that has wreaked havoc on rush hour traffic here in
Indiana. Slow going.
Oh, my gosh.
Slow going, but here we are. Worth the wait.
Here we are.
I had a little traffic jam coming out to the bar from the inside. Yeah. The dog
slowed you down.
Yeah, but I got the trash out to the end of the drive. That was treacherous. We made it, though.
All right, Brad, here on the YouTubes, how do people interact with us, my man?
They watch us.
All right.
They like, they share, they subscribe, and they go to all 16 podcast channels that are out there and find us audio if you don't want to look at us. Because really, the only guy here that doesn't have a voice for radio would be Jake. The rest of us...
I hate my voice. I've told you that.
No, you have a voice for radio, and we have a face for radio.
Hey, come on now.
TV at one time.
You still do.
All right, so Jake, what I know about you is, and Jake and I, actually, none of us are, we're not friends with Jake. I literally asked if he'd be willing to come on.
Buddy, come on now.
I asked Jake because he's cool on the radio. I was like, let's just see if I can get him to come on the podcast. He's like, sounds cool.
Boom.
So here we are. So thanks for coming. It really means a lot to me. Every now and then you'll see a picture of me and Jake and Derek up there, because we have met at the Bailey and Wood golf outing a couple times. And so I was like, let's see if we can get them on the show. And here you are. So
do know that about mortgages, by the way. You asked about that. Bailey and Wood. Those guys are awesome. And they also, the thing I love about it is that Golf Outing Shows is, you know, they put a lot of money back into the community, which is such an important part of any major business, right? But at the South Side, in particular of Indianapolis, schools and choirs and churches and groups, they do a lot for that. So Mike and the gang, great people at Bailey & Wood.
They are. That's a great company.
Absolutely.
Big competition for me, but they're a great company.
Sorry about that.
They're good. They're good guys. They do a great job at what they do. It's one of those companies that if somebody says, oh, I'm already pre-approved with Bailey & Wood, well, I know they're not getting ripped off, but I knew they're using a good company. No.
All right, so where I was going. So what I'm about to do is you went to North Central, correct?
Correct.
So you grew up in Indianapolis.
Did.
And did you always want to be in broadcasting?
Yeah, for the most part. When I was really little, and when I say really little, I mean preschool age into like elementary school, my mom, you know, had told me I was going to be a doctor. And I'm like, okay. I mean, kind of flippantly told me, right?
Right.
So
all our mothers tell us that, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Or a professional athlete.
A combination of two things happened when I was in early schooling age. The first is my mom took me down. She had a friend that worked at the med center, so I went down there, and I went into the blood bank, and they were spinning plasma, and I saw it, and I got super nauseous, and I said to my mom, I'm going to be a sportscaster, and I was probably 10. And then around that same time, you really started getting legitimate report cards and started seeing what my grades were, and I'm like, now I'm definitely not going to be a doctor. So when I knew – when I was really young, guys, honestly, I would stay up well past probably most kids' bedtime, but I would stay up to watch the 11 o'clock sportscast. I was fascinated by it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in the sixth grade, I picked up the phone. I used the phone book, and I called Ed Sorensen, who was a big sportscaster at the time at Channel 6. And I called him, and he answered and said, you're sports. And I said, yeah, I'm looking for Ed Sorensen. He said, who's Ed?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my name is Jake Query, and I'm a sixth grader at Eastwood Middle School, and I want to be a sportscaster. And he said, buddy, everybody wants to be a sportscaster. And he hung up.
No way.
So I called back. I called right back, and he answered. And I said, hey, I have a question for you. And he said, okay. And I said, if you went to a restaurant and the waiter was rude to you, would you go back? And he said, probably not. Why? And I said, because I watch you every night, and you just hung up on me. So, like, I'm your customer. And he goes, well, buddy, what's your name again? And I said, Jake Query. And he said, is it Jay Query or Jake Wary? I said, no, it's a double consonant, Jake Query. And he said, well, have your dad bring you down to the TV station. And I did the next day, and I shadowed him. And then I think I called him probably the day after that, said, can I come down again? And by the time I was a junior in high school, I had my own entry card into Channel 6. I could go down whenever I wanted to. And Ed took me under his wing and basically gave me carte blanche to learn from him. So I knew from a very young age that's what I wanted to do. I was able to do it in high school and then, you know, find my way very circuitously through college, and I've just kind of hung around. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I wake up all the time and I'm like, so when is this, like, what am I going to find it sober, right?
Yeah. When do I have to go to law school?
That's right. I'm in my early 50s, so here we are.
You know, David Calabro probably would have gave you a car.
Well, true. He'd have given me one of those pace cars, right?
He'd have gave you a pace car.
Right. So from that story, you and I have two connections. Number one, when I was at IU, my mom had been a nurse forever, retired now, but that's what she did. It only connected here because I decided instead of donating blood in college, I was going to volunteer at the blood drive. So I am standing there. My job was going to be carrying the bags of blood from being donated over to the paramedics because they put it in the cooler. While standing there, it's just all going black. And I almost passed out. They had to sit me down, give me some food and drink. Then they stuck my ass at the front door.
No,
and, I told my mom. She still makes fun of me.
See, my mom.
She doesn't watch the show. So, hi, Mom.
My mom told me that I was going to be a lawyer, but I couldn't stand the sight of blood. So I decided to be a doctor, but I couldn't stand the sight of lawyers. So I'm in the marks.
That's right. Both of them, right? Yeah.
That's right. And then second connection, when I was finishing up my degree at IU, which was sports broadcasting, my last semester, which was actually summer, I interned with Ed at Channel 6. And it was a cool experience. Ultimately, I never got a job in sports broadcasting, mainly to my own laziness, I will say. But yeah, so I believe you and I crossed paths when I was at Channel 6.
I was there. I spent a lot of time there. Johnny Dearth was the producer. Jay Bousbeck was the assistant. Scott Hoke was there. Rob,
I love Scott Hoke.
And I was around all those guys, yeah.
Went golfing with Scott Hoke.
Great.
Down in southern Indiana. He's a really good dude. Any idea what John Durth is doing nowadays?
He's in the mortgage business, I believe. John Durth, who was the producer for a long time at Channel 6, and then he got out of the business, and yeah, he is. And a matter of fact, I'm fairly certain he's either, I think he's back in Illinois. I could be wrong on that, but he was for a long time in the mortgage business.
How about that? I swear, like, right around the time my internship was ending, like, he was leaving 6 to maybe go work at ESPN?
Correct.
That's all right? Okay.
To Bristol, that's right. Yep.
All right.
That's exactly right. So I would have been there, I mean, routinely, I graduated from high school in 91, so we're about the same age.
Yep.
Yep, spent a lot of time there. Read a lot of media guides.
You know, there's not a lot of people that get the opportunity to do their job for as long as you have and it actually be their passion. Like, I'm in a position today where I don't feel like I go to work. I love being in the mortgage business. I wake up on a Sunday morning and go off to my desk to see what I can do, and I never feel like I'm working. So you probably have that same feeling, right?
Yeah, I do. I think that, first off, I'm well aware of this. The only reason I'm able to do what I do, quite frankly, is because I had a security and a safety net underneath me, right? So really the only reason that I was able to ultimately land a job and parlay it into a career is because I was able to hold out for it longer than most people, because I knew that just based on my background, the support of my parents, my grandparents helped me with an internship, at least paying for me to live in New York City when I was doing an internship, things like that. I had a lot of advantages a lot of kids don't have.
Sure.
And I really, and I mean this sincerely, I don't think that I have any more skill or apparatus to do what I do than most of the people that seek out to do it. I just had the luxury of time. And so I was able to ride it out because when I got out of school and I'm 23, 24, 25 years old, and a lot of guys and gals that I grew up with are off setting the world afire, and I'm still working 3 jobs and hourly wage temp jobs here and there with still having my foot inside somewhat of a door, just waiting for eventually the door to swing its way open. And I was able to continue to do that because I had a supporting net underneath me, knowing that I wasn't going to end up totally on the street, right?
Sure.
So it really was by sheer luck of where I was born and how I was born that allowed me to be able to do it.
Now, did you graduate college?
I did, but not until a year ago.
That's what I thought. Which college did you go to?
Indiana. Well, I started at the University of Kansas.
Oh, that's right.
And then I transferred to, I went a semester at IUPUI, then transferred to Bloomington. And then when I hit a point where I was like, I didn't feel like what I wanted to do and my passion, that I was making the right steps by being in a classroom, quite frankly. So I didn't tell my parents, but I started working at 6. And then one day I was working 2 jobs. And one afternoon I was working at the cigar store in Broderpool where I'd been working in the summers and during breaks. And my mom walked in to get a refill on her Mont Blanc fountain pen. or her rollerball pen and walked in and she's like, aren't you supposed to be in class?
I'm interning here.
So I had 19 hours left when I left. And then I went back 2 years ago and that 19 hours became 31 because some of the classes that I'd taken, the prerequisites were like 300s, 400s, those classes weren't available anymore. So contrary to popular belief, college credits don't expire. But you might have to reroute some of the areas because some of the classes that you had, the under
above
class
it has changed.
Or, yeah, the roadmap changed a little bit. So anyway, but I did go back. I think it was 4 semesters it took me in a part-time online level and finally finished.
I remember you talking about your math class on the radio.
Brutal.
I'm a former math teacher, so I was feeling for you.
Well, so, how long have you been a psychopath?
I'll share something.
Yeah.
I have 8th grade math, which took me 4 years of high school to graduate my 8th grade math class to graduate from high school.
And now you crunch numbers all day, right?
I've owned 2 mortgage companies.
Yeah.
Sold one successfully and started another one.
But
I have a fancy calculator.
That's exactly right. Well, I had to take algebra. Honestly, I think it was my 7th attempt. And when I finally said I'm going to go back to school, the math was really the hindrance of why I never had finished it, because I knew that those were the 2 obstacles. And I just, no matter how hard I tried, I just could not grasp it. And so when I went back, I mean, I hate to say this, but in today's world, especially in an online area, you can basically take a picture of any problem and instantly get the answer, right?
Yep.
But I said to myself, no, I want to learn that. Like, I'm going to learn this. It was kind of my white whale. And I still couldn't. I mean, I did everything that you're supposed to do. And I sat down and I took my first sample quiz. And this was like Algebra 200. And I was so ready for it. And I got a 42%.
Woo!
So I just said, well, okay, this is sitting in the cards for me. And then thankfully, I had a friend whose mother was a retired math teacher from Park Tutor. And she agreed to meet with me a couple times a week at the Glendale Library. And I sat through the book and I said, Terry, here's the thing. Like, I want to learn this. I want to try to grasp this. And I didn't set the world afire on it. But I will say that in the 31 hours I had to complete, I got two B's. The rest were A's. I got two B's.
Nice.
One was in the second math class I had to take because I did get an A in the first one. The second one was in the second math class that I had to complete. I got a B. And then the lowest grade that I got was Introduction to Broadcast Media. I got a B minus. And I really did try. I did.
You know, you said a little bit ago that you don't feel like you have anything special, that you've just been put in special positions to be able to get to where you're at. And I've known you for a few minutes here, and you have something special that most people don't have. It's the ability to see that you need to do something, speak up when you need to speak up about it, and put the work in to make that thing happen. Because it only happens from work. So you have something special.
You know, it's interesting, because, and I appreciate you saying that, but I'll be honest, like graduating from college, I guess it was important to me because actually the reason it was important to me is because it was the only thing really that I'd set out to do that I didn't finish.
Sure.
But more so, and I didn't realize this at 19, 20, 20, who does, right?
Yeah.
But as I got older, I realized the sacrifices and the things that my parents went through to give me the opportunity to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to have taken that for granted when I was a younger person, even though they never held it against me, but they're still around. So when I went back to school, I didn't tell my parents I was doing it. Kind of like when I left, I didn't tell them.
Right, yeah. You've seen me, and I just graduated.
I took the enrollment. I took the enrollment sheet, put it in an envelope, and gave it to my mom for Christmas. And she opened it up, and was like, "What is this?" And then she realized it was my re-enrollment in school. And then I did the same when I made the dean's list. A year later, I gave that to her, and then they were able to come to the graduation. So it was cool.
But
again, I mean, a lot of that was just, now I just had the discipline to do it, right?
Well, and you put the effort in to make it happen.
For sure.
The people that don't make it are the people that quit at something and it doesn't bother them anymore.
Right.
You know?
That's fair, yeah.
Successful people are the people that go the extra mile. I always said, for me, I wasn't really smart in school. I got my girlfriend pregnant really young. We got married really young. I had nothing there to say I was going to be successful. So I always seen other people who were successful and thought, man, I would look at a guy like you and think, man, you're going to do so much better than this than I will. So if I do 10 times the amount of work you do, I should be at least half as successful as you. And that's what I always did. Just 10 times as much as
anything. So were you pretty competitive?
Like, not in sports or anything.
But I mean, just in general.
Not necessarily until, for me, I had three kids before my wife was 21 and I was 22 and we were dirt poor. And I wanted to succeed. I had a role model when I was a kid who was very successful. And I seen that you can be that. So I just searched for people who were successful, tried to learn what they knew, and then just worked 10 times as hard as anybody else.
Right. Yeah, because I will admit, you know, I was competitive as a younger person, probably to a detriment, because, you know, like when I was hanging around six and you're interning or whatever, I would look at every person and say, like, I know where I want to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's only so many positions. So I want to make sure that I'm putting myself in position above that person. And I think it wasn't until I freed myself from that competition and then just worried about me.
Sure.
And that's when it all came together.
When you say competitive, I am in the sales aspect of, I'm going to sell more than anybody else in my company. And I always have. I've always, like, when I lose, it's like, holy cow, you know, I didn't do enough.
What the hell happened?
But that's the only place really that I've been competitive. I didn't have a real streak until I got into sales. Sales is what made me push harder. But I can see where, when you're playing the politics of getting to where you're trying to move up that pits you against other people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's harder to move up. But if you just freely accept where you are and do everything you can, boom.
Boom. There you are. You were on TV with Channel 6?
Correct. So I worked...
Any other networks?
Yeah. So my first job, I'll never forget one day, I was 27. I was still hanging out at Channel 6. After each show, I would go in and I'd be in there until 2 o'clock in the morning. Ed and I would...
Easy to do.
We would... I would redo his sportscast and watch tape and, you know. So one day, Ed just said to me, he said, hey, let me ask you something. I said, okay. So why are you still here? I said, what do you mean? He said, what are you doing here? And he said, you know, your problem is you're afraid to go out and fail. You're afraid for somebody to tell you you're not good enough, which was totally accurate. And he said, I think it's time for you to get a job. And I thought, oh, my God, my parents talked to
me. I've got to move out.
That's right. And he said, here's what we're going to do. And he said, we're going to go work on getting you a job. And I said, okay. So we got in his car, and we drove north on Meridian for 3 blocks and took a right into the 21st Amendment liquor store. And I thought, what in the world? And we walked in, and he said, go buy 2 cases of Stroh's. So I bought 2 cases of Stroh's, walked out, we got in the car, and went back to Channel 6, and we went back in the tape room, and there was a guy named Paul Castagnoli. And Paul Castagnoli was sitting back there, and Ed said, buddy, put his arm around him. He goes, here's what we're going to do. Jake's going to do one of my sportscasts, and you're going to tape it. He's got 2 cases of Stroh's for you. And then after he does it and you tape it, I need you to make a bunch of copies on VHS. We're going to send them to every TV station in the country. And Paulie looked over and saw the 2 cases of Stroh's and went, all right, cool.
That's
awesome. I went in and I did it, and I sent out tapes to everywhere. And every day I'd come home and no messages on the answer machine for seemingly forever. And then one day I came home and the light was blinking, and there were 2 messages.
Oh,
one was from Green Bay, and one was from Fox Sports in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And they said, hey, listen, we're launching a regional network around, and we need people. They needed bodies. I mean, that was,
sure.
They just needed bodies. And they said, do you want to work in St. Louis or Detroit? And I said, I guess St. Louis?
Yeah, I won't get shot in St. Louis.
And they said, depends on what part.
Today it's a different story.
They said, can you start like 2 weeks or whatever? And so 2 weeks later, I was working, covering the Cardinals, the Rams, the greatest show on turf, all that for Fox Sports in St. Louis.
Wow.
So I did that. And then after my contract was up there, and they were then starting to already phase out this new, you know, kind of launch show that we were doing. I came back to Channel 6, and that's when I started as a kind of a reporter, producer / weekend guy, and then just kind of did what I could for Channel 6. And I did that until 2007. And then I switched over to radio and replaced Vince Welch on WIBC, and that's what allowed me to get on the racing side of things.
I see. That's what brought you into racing.
Yeah, yeah.
Did Vince get you into racing?
I mean, I grew up a huge Indy 500 fan, right? So, I mean, you grew up an Indy 500 fan, right? And no, so I had always, probably the one goal more than any other that I had as a kid was to be a part of the radio network for the 500. Because I could always listen to it. When I would go to the race, I would tape it, and then I would listen to the tapes, you know, and just, I loved the magic of it and the symmetry of it, and just the, it sounded so electric, right, when you would listen to the race. So when I worked at WIBC, when I got the job at IBC, and Vince had called me and said, hey, I'm leaving, and I think you'd be good for this job. And so he put in a word for me, and they ended up hiring me. But I remember thinking, well, this is a slam dunk. WIBC's the flagship.
Right. No problem.
I went and met with their, you know, they facilitated for me to meet with the general manager of the radio network for IndyCar. And I went and met with him, and realistically, I thought, you know, he was going to say, well, I mean,
you're in.
Long history of people are all people that were sports people at IBC, so you're in, right? And I tell a lot of young people this. I went in there, and first off, I'm like, I don't think this guy knows who I am, which is fine. And then secondly, he said, well, we don't have anything available, but if you want to do a practice session for one of the Indy Lights shows on the internet, we'll put you on that. And I tell people all the time, I had 2 choices. I tell young people this, young people this. I could have said, dude, that's not what I came here for. Or I could say, you know what? You're only as good as the value of what the person who is determining your value is telling you. And so I said, okay. So I went and did a practice session for the Indy Lights on the internet, on IndyCar.com. And that night, and this was in May, So yeah. It was in preparation for the Freedom 100. And that night they called me and said, hey, one of our pit reporters has a conflict for the 500. So can you do the race broadcast for and I said, sure. So I did the 500. And then the next week they called me and said, can you go to Milwaukee? And I said, okay. Yep. I went to Milwaukee. And then the week after that, they said, can you go to Watkins Glen? And that was 200 and some odd races again, right?
I'm aware.
And so anyway, so I did the pits for 2 years, and then they moved me up into turn two, and now I'm in turn three. So
I wish we had a thing that when somebody dropped like this massive nugget that people need to catch, and there was a bell. Because you're right. It's not about what you think you are. It's about what the other person sees the value in you. And all these people get so, I'm not going to do that job.
Yeah.
I'm so overwhelmed. And that's my least favorite saying is hear somebody say, oh, I'm overwhelmed. Well, quit doing that to yourself.
Right.
Get over yourself and try to be some kind of service to somebody else and let them see the value in you. That's a huge nugget.
I remember when I was a kid, I collected baseball cards. Baseball cards are a big thing for your kids, right?
Absolutely.
I had beer cans.
What's that?
I had beer cans.
I still have and these are probably like the dime a dozen beer cans. Billy Beer.
Yep.
I got a can of Billy beer cans. Tons of like Cincinnati Reds, Hoot and Bowl, or however you say it. Iron City for the Pittsburgh Steelers, all those things, yeah. Right?
I was a beer guy.
So I always remember the Ricky Henderson rookie because Ricky Henderson's rookie card was an 80 tops. And when I was probably in the fourth grade, which was the peak of my, going to baseball card shows, cards and everything else. So my dad says to me one day, you go to these card shows a lot. Like, do you get some pretty good cards? I said, oh, yeah. So I'm showing him all these cards. I said, Dad, there's Ricky Henderson rookie. My dad says, oh, okay, yeah, the guy that stole like 132 bases or whatever. I go, yeah. And I said, that card's worth $200. And my dad said, really? I said, yeah. And he said, so have you found anybody to give you $200 for it yet? And I said, well, no, but that's the Beckett's guide says it's $200. And my dad said, Jake, it's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it.
That's 100%.
And unless you find somebody willing to give you $200 for it, it's not worth that.
That's right.
And I've never forgotten that. And that same mentality goes with me of you might walk into a situation thinking you're above that situation. But if you really were, you wouldn't be walking in there pining for it, right?
Yep.
So you're Ricky Anderson's rookie.
I mean, there's a fine line between knowing your worth, right, and having that confidence.
For sure.
And then being too cocky to have somebody else see the value because you thought too high in that.
Right.
I don't know how to say it, but yeah, you're hitting on all kinds of things that are just, that's why we love these success happy hour programs because so many things get said that I think are a theme.
Oh yeah.
Rolling theme. We've had some pretty successful guys on here and gals.
Yep.
And the thing that comes across is that same theme. You're plugging it.
Work hard and do whatever it takes.
Do whatever it takes. The extra mile. Read the book, Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
I look back, and I'm sure you guys are the same way. I'm not saying it was fun when you went through it, but I look back on when I was still chasing it.
Chasing the best part.
And correct. And at that age, when I'm 25, 26, 27 years old, and I'm working probably 60 hours a week, and it's all hourly wage, and I'm, you're tabulating at the end of each week your hours to find out, if you're going to pay the bills.
Yeah. Right?
And you're scrounging to get together with your buddies and go to a baseball game or whatever else. And I'm not saying it's fun when you go through it, but you know what's funny is, like now, the music that I listen to, the TV shows that I watch, the stuff that I most pine for is from that era because it was, things were still like simplistic to me.
Mm.
And I look back on it and I think that was actually the most fun I've ever had because you were chasing a carrot, but there was a carrot there you were chasing and it gave you purpose and it gave.
Yeah.
So now you just have to come up with new carrots, right?
Right, yeah.
And every couple of months, you got to come up with a new carrot that you're going to chase after, and that's what I try to do.
It's constantly creating a new journey.
Correct.
Like the key to all the things that drive you to success isn't the end. It's not the money. It's not all of those things. It's the journey that took you there and what you learned through it. And honestly, how much easier it becomes when you decide to do something else. Like
right.
Waking up the next day and selling a business, per se, and say, okay, well, let's start another one. Well, already learned all this ugly stuff back here that seems so bad, right? But really, man, I'm glad I went through all that. I'm glad I had all of these ugly times. So let me figure out how to get through.
I've thought about this. Like, you sell a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, and I mean, this is none of my business, but theoretically, when you sell a business, you then have the capital to be able to relax a little bit.
Yes. Probably a non-compete that tells you you can't do it again for a while.
Well, but then I look around here and I look at, you know, the fruits of your labor, and I think to myself, and this has always been fascinating to me, the people that get to that point where your whole life you build this business or you build an empire or you build whatever it might be to be able to eventually cash in and chill. But then once you do it, you now have the means to chill, but you don't have anything to drive you and fuel you, I guess. So
the fun's in the journey.
I was going to say, so what is it that makes you, instead of saying, you know what, I'm just going to relax in my bar here and watch some movies and travel and whatever else, what made you want to go back and do it all over again?
When I sold my company, I started another company. We started a snow removal and landscape business and hated it. I hated it like a year in. I was like, this is the worst business I could have ever been in. Only one highlight out of it all is I sold all the snow removal for the Super Bowl and worked with everybody at the NFL and the Super Bowl host committee with populace.
And then it was 65 degrees during the Super Bowl.
First game he ever attended in his life was the damn...
I went to the Super Bowl. It was the first game I ever went to, live football game ever. But I had a retainer. I sold that. So it's okay that it didn't snow. It would have been better if it did. But that was like a highlight, but it also taught me something in an ability that I didn't know I have. You know, I presented in front of the governor and Frank Sipovich and Roger
Goodell.
Say his name wrong every time. I had to present in front of those people without being told that I was presenting in front of them. Mark Miles was there. She would kill me. Allison Melton was there. You know, a lot of...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Mel Rose, you know, Mel... she works for the Pacers.
Mel Reigns.
Mel Reigns was there. You know,
names.
All those people would kill me. You know, I had to go in and present, create this system, and then build this confidence that we could do what we said we could do, and we did. We actually performed snow removal because we were there from December 1st to the end of February, so there were some events. But it taught me that I actually know how to sell. Like, my whole career, I second-guessed myself through all of the work, and then once I sold that company and I was done with snow removal and landscaping, I set back to the thing that I liked the most, and it was doing loans and serving people. It was actually seeing that person get a house had more like reward for me than selling a multi-million-dollar contract with the NFL. I was like, there was a reward that was gratifying because it was helping somebody else. So when I figured out that really success for me was serving other people and helping them reach their goals, and I really put their goals out front, It goes back to a thing I used to say all the time. If you help other people get what they want, you'll inevitably get what you want.
Right.
But if you focus on what you want, wrong focus. You know, so it's that service. And that's what I like most about what I do. You know, and now this social media and podcast stuff that I got all wrapped up in is a blast. But that's, I don't think you ever really quit because I think people get a job, right? They work at a factory or they do their job and then they get their retirement, and their job was their purpose. And so many people die within years of retiring because that purpose went away. So if you can keep a purpose of some kind, then I think that's the long life happiness I'm only 56. That's just my guess, but
right.
I have a lot of friends that are older.
The old man in this group.
I have a lot of friends that in racing, right? A lot of people that have race cars and sponsor teams or have teams and all kinds of racing from, you know, sprint cars to silver crown cars to motocross. And a lot of them are retired and very wealthy, but now they dump their money into this passion. And they're still trying to make money in racing. We all know that's really difficult.
Come on. Yeah.
Or is the best way to have $1 million in racing to start with, what, four now, right? Because of inflation. So, you know, it's that purpose behind what you do that your life, I think, is driven by purpose.
That's probably a long-winded
answer
to the person that's supposed to be being interviewed.
That's a good answer, though.
His job is to interview. So,
yeah, that's true.
You know, he's going to have...
Somebody told me today. Somebody sent me a thing that said, during your interviews, you ask too many questions.
I heard you say that.
How's that a thing?
What am I supposed to do?
And you ask the questions because you're inquisitive and you want to know, and you probably know that there's something inside that nut that you need to crack.
An interview, isn't it?
Right.
Ask questions.
Well, you got a 3 hours of airtime to fill.
I did say that too, right?
Who do you think, in all of broadcasting, who do you think is one of the best interviewers?
Letterman.
Letterman.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Howard Stern, too.
Stern's very good because Stern, both of them have the same characteristic, which is they make people feel comfortable. And then Letterman is different because Letterman would have people like on edge, right?
Right.
Letterman very clearly controlled the narrative.
Absolutely.
Howard Stern is really good because he gets people comfortable to the point where they forget they're talking to anybody other than just a dude
but him
in the basement, right?
Yeah.
Like they're just, they just open up and tell him everything. You know, it's a really good question. Obviously, Barbara Walters was well-renowned for it. Mm. I mean, that was a little before my time.
We were kids.
Like, I was watching it a lot, right? But there are a lot that are excellent at it. I mean, obviously now, through the podcast era, you know, you have people doing it that probably aren't even quote-unquote broadcasters.
Sure.
Conversationally. I just think the key is to just have a conversation. You know what I mean? And I don't think enough people listen.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's a fact.
I mean, it's easy when your job is an interviewer to be thinking of what your next question is going to be.
But you don't know that until you know what their answer is.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I've heard people conduct an interview, and I think to myself, if this person was interviewing O.J. Simpson, and in the middle of the interview, O.J. Simpson said, yeah, I'll be honest with you, you know, seeing the Bills finally have a team to contend with the Super Bowl. I mean, of course, then again, I never thought I'd kill my wife either, but I did that. And the person would go, back to the Bills.
Yeah, do you think Josh,
listen to what he just said? Like, you have to segue off of what was just said, right?
Yeah.
And I think, so the answer to your question for me would be anybody that you get the impression during the interview that they're listening to the answer, that anybody that does that, that's the key. And both of those guys, I think, do that very well.
You know, it's been so long since I've got to watch Letterman.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
well, yeah.
He's got a Netflix show that's.
I haven't seen him since he turned into that caveman Santa guy.
That's exactly right.
But I used to stay up and watch late night TV.
Oh, it's great.
I mean, I never miss late night TV. And today, I don't even know or care, and I especially don't care if they leave the country. Like they say they're going to on late night television. To me, it just went away. Good.
Well, plus you're also in bed earlier.
I am now. Yeah, I'm 50. I'm 55 years old. I'm in bed by 9:30.
But I think the platform is different.
I mean, completely.
Because of the fact that, you know, for the obvious reasons, right? There was a time, you know, I'll watch old Johnny Carson interviews.
Love them.
I mean, obviously, the creme de la creme, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But a lot of it you watch and you go, did people really think this was funny?
Oh, when Robin Williams was on there, yes, they did.
And Robin Williams, when he was on Letterman, was must-see TV, right?
Oh, it was unbelievable.
But my point being, I mean, Carson was a whole different, I mean, he was the greatest probably to ever do. Letterman will tell you that, right?
Yeah.
But at that time period, you know, they're just, you only had so many options. And so everything was must-see appointment television. I mean, now there are so many areas and avenues. I mean, network television in general. And when I say network television, I don't just mean ABC, NBC, CBS. I mean terrestrial television.
Right.
I mean, people under the age of 40 now don't even watch it because...
Correct.
I mean, they do. But, you know, streaming and so many different... I mean, how many times you talk to somebody and they're like, oh, man, I watched the best show last night. Well, what is it? And then they tell you and you go, where did you watch it?
Right.
You never heard of that?
The streaming service. You're like, I didn't even know that existed, right? I mean, it's the wild, wild west.
But my daughter bought her house and I said, I'm going to get you some TVs. And one of the things, if you walked around my house, you've noticed there's a television in every room. And she's like, well, Dad, I have a TV. And I said, well, okay, we got to get your cable set up. She's like, cable.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm not getting cable. I'm like, how are you going to watch the news? He's like, I'm not going to watch the news. And that next generation down, you know, she's 30, she just turned 36. and none of my kids from her down, they don't have cable TV. They don't watch regular news. They get their news from TikTok. They watch interviews on, you know, streaming services, and they listen to podcasts. So it is way different.
The other thing, I'll tell you the other thing. I mean, this is into a whole different area, but here's where things really drastically changed in the industry I work in, okay? And it began really, to be honest with you, when cable television, in 1980, 84, 85, cable television was predominantly only in the rural areas. People had to have it because that's how they got their,
right,
you, to be able to get.
That's how you knew if school was canceled.
Correct, to get network television. And so then.
That was must-be
TV. Ted Turner was the first to say, you know what? I'm going to try to do a 24-hour network that is nothing but news.
Yep, yep. 24-hour nationwide news.
Right. And the Gulf War catapulted CNN into a whole different area because Bernard Shaw is live broadcasting at 10 o'clock at night, and you're going, am I watching a war live on television?
Right.
And then shortly thereafter, so that was the early 90s. By the late 90s, the huge satellite dish ingestion of cable went away to the point where now the internet was being able to feed, okay? And so all of a sudden, Dish Network and, you know, Comcast and all these places were saying, wait a minute, we can now do 200 channels.
Right.
So as a result of that, each of the networks said, well, let's compete against CNN and do a 24-hour news channel. And thus was the birth of Fox News Channel and MSNBC and,
CNBC.
You know, CNBC and all of those, right?
Right.
Well, then they figured out, guys, to be honest with you, you know, there really isn't as much news as there is in the world. There isn't enough to do 24 hours of a news wheel. So in the primetime hours, they decided to do editorial shows.
Right.
Commentary.
Sensational stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so because you now had between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. people doing shows reacting to the news, but they were on a network that said news.
Right.
So people took opinion as fact.
Right.
And it blurred the lines in this country to the point where it became difficult to determine for people and discern the difference between commentary. In the old newspaper days, when you actually had a newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
You knew because at the top of the page it said
news.
Editorial
right,
or,
yeah.
or news yeah. or city state. So you knew when you were reading something that was not news but opinion.
Right, yeah.
Now there is no defined line of the difference of the two, and it's just made things murky and messy.
I said those went away with Brokaw and Koppel.
Totally.
You know, that's when news was news. You know, you didn't know when Tom Brokaw was talking necessarily what political slant he had.
Correct.
He just read the news. And, you know, you go back to Tim Russert on Meet the Press.
Correct.
That's the last person on Meet the Press that didn't have an agenda in every single show they did. And I say all the time, I watch the news. Channel 6 happens to be the news that I watch. Rafael Sanchez was really good friends with a loan officer we had named Jose Rodriguez. They were best friends. He was best man at his wedding. And so I started watching 6 back then. Kevin Gregory's the only weatherman in Indianapolis that doesn't lie. I really like Kevin, and his dad told the truth too. Some of the others don't. You know, they think this is a foot of snow. That's right. That's how they've told their wives things work math-wise. And so Channel 6 is what I watch, and then I go to Good Morning America because I really, really like
Michael Strahan,
and then I switch to Fox Business when that's over.
Michael Strahan's going to be driving the pace car.
Yeah. I know. That's fantastic. I want to just watch him get in and out of the car.
I'll never forget when Morgan Freeman drove the pace car, and so Morgan Freeman was driving the pace car, and he was very cool by all account, and he was out there the day before learning how to do it, and they had the Dairy Association's out there to do, you know, kind of to film him getting in and out of the car and do a promotional thing. And Morgan Freeman, clearly that no one had told him the specifics of what was going on. So he gets out of doing his practice laps in the pace car, and they give him a thing of milk. And he hadn't been briefed yet on what this was all about.
So I'd rather a sip of the beer.
That's right. He takes a sip of the milk and then jokingly, like, kind of like regurgitates it and goes, I'm lactose intolerant. Like, buddy. From the Dairy Association, who are the best. I mean, I love the Dairy Association.
They're like, oh, good Lord.
But they're like, oh, my gosh.
Get back in the.
I think they basically said, oh, we're going to do this again, and here's why. And then he
just poisoned Morgan Freeman.
I wish I could do Morgan Freeman's voice, right? Because I loved his voice.
In 1967.
Exactly. We need to do a shot.
We do, Jake. We do a shot every show.
Okay.
For this shot, and being our guest, you get to choose from the wall of liquor. That's a lot of tequila.
Ding, ding. Ding, 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 ding.
Do you have... I don't see it up here. You don't have Jefferson Reserve, right?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
Jefferson, the ocean
up there.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You want some of that?
That's my pick.
All right.
I picked the one that's the highest up there. Sorry.
It's all right.
That. Nope. Top shelf, top
Thanks
shelf.
For watching. That was part one of a two-part video. There's so many good nuggets in the interview we did with Jake that we had to break it up into two parts. So come back and check out part two when it's uploaded. Thanks for watching.